Okay, there's our opportunity now to talk with Stanton Friedman about UFOs and extraterrestrial life. We'll take your calls with him when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Stanton Friedman with us. His website is his name. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Stan, working on any new works, any books these days?
Well, our newest book, Kathleen Martin and my, our third book together, came out in September, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers.
Aha.
And the focus is on how did people like Dr. Edward U. Condon, a very prominent scientist.
That's right. Colorado University, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, University of Colorado. Yeah. And Dr. Donald Menzel, Harvard University astronomer, and Philip Klass, a noisy negativist who worked for Aviation Week and Space Technology. How did they wind up saying such dumb things? Well, I mean, you know, you expect something better from competent, prominent people.
Or, Stan, were they paid to say dumb things?
Well, that's part of the question. And I found out my great discovery in all this was that Menzel, whom I didn't like when he was alive, and who wrote three debunking UFO books, not one, not two, three, and gave articles and stuff, I found out, much to my surprise and everybody else's surprise, and not known while he was alive, had a longer continuous association with the National Security Agency. 30 years, he told Jack Kennedy, President Kennedy, they knew each other. Of anybody, he did classified work for the CIA. He was a world-class cryptologist. This came as a total shock. Nobody knew any of this while he was alive. I looked very hard and were surprised. But since a few years ago, there was even an article about his cryptologic contributions of Donald Menzel. So for people who think guys can't lead a secret life, you're wrong. There were three English spies, incidentally, Burgess, Philby, and McLean, you may remember. They were all Russian spies, but they worked for British intelligence for 15 years. That's leading a double life, wouldn't you say?
Well, I would think so. I would think so.
You've got to be really careful. But Condon, he said, no chance that anybody will be visiting Earth for 10,000 years. Yeah, there's no scientific basis for that at all. Just look back 100 years and find out what we didn't know back then, you know. So moving forward. That's the newest book, anyway.
Oh, good for you. Now, before we take calls, I want to get your take on the late Zechariah Sitchin, his theory that we were genetically altered by a ET group called the Anunnaki. What do you think?
I leave room for it. I don't have a definitive answer because I said I like to have facts in hand before putting mouth in gear, but it's certainly possible. You know, we tend to forget that explorers go out for all kinds of reasons. Look at all the people who came to the New World after Columbus. Some wanted to steal gold, you know, some wanted to convert the heathens, some wanted to grow vegetables, you know, tomatoes, potatoes, etc. Some wanted to set up new colonies with different religious ideas. So there isn't one size fits all. I leave room for this having been, how should I put it, engineered, if you will. And everything changes as soon as you realize, hey, there's loads of planets out there. You know, find a good one for your purposes. And also, we tend to forget that every civilization, if it's got any sense, is going to be prepared in case something really bad happens and you need to bail out. An asteroid, for example. You know, like did in the dinosaurs, or a nuclear war. You may want to look around for a nearby planet where you can go and reestablish yourself. You know, maybe global warming raises the water level and you're going to be underwater. Who knows? So it may be that there are neighbors. Like I say, over 10,000 planets within 100 light years, that's a lot of neighbors.
Let's take some calls for you, Mr. Friedman.
Okay.
Stanton Friedman with us. Joe in Syracuse, New York, to get us started. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hey, George, Dan. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you.
Great. I got a question. How come nobody really talks about the UFO crash in Missouri in 1941 and the ties to advanced technology for the war effort, forward-looking radar, sonar technology?
That's the Cape Girardeau episode. We've talked about it on the show before. Not a lot of people do. You're right, Joe. Stan, are you familiar with that Cape Girardeau situation?
I've talked to Charlotte Mann, and I found other people in her family. It was her, I guess her grandfather, who was called in to give the last rites for survivors. It sort of gets lost in the shuffle. There was a war came along very quickly, and kept people busy with other things. But there's also Aztec. One of the books listed on my website is the true story of Aztec, where Scott and Suzanne Ramsey have done an incredible job of gathering information, including paperwork that we didn't know existed. And Kecksburg, there have been several crashes. UFOs aren't the drivers aren't infallible, apparently. But, you can understand how governments don't want to talk about that sort of stuff. We live on a planet in which nationalism is the only game in town, right? You get to be powerful by running a country and taking over other countries and stuff like that. We don't have a planetary government. I mean, we've got the United Nations, but it certainly doesn't rule the roost on this planet. So it's a major concern for anybody not to let the rest of the world know that we know something, because maybe we can find out what they know and put it together with what we know and come up with a new military system.
You got it. You got it. I was with Don Schmidt this weekend taping a television program, which I've got to get you for that. And we talked about Roswell and some of the episodes tied into that. And I had asked him a question of a fellow I interviewed a long time ago when I was doing my local radio show in St. Louis years ago, Stan. Frank Kaufman. Frank Kaufman tied in to Roswell, and he thought Frank was a fraud. What did you think about him?
Well, I agree with them. Don was there when I was talking to Frank and Don and Kevin Randall, and he really had nothing to back up his story. And then Don, fortunately, got access to his papers after Frank died and found that he had fake documents. He really had nothing to offer. I mean, it was a crazy story to begin with. Frank was an opportunist. Isn't that a polite way of saying he was telling stories?
It was a great story. He told a great tale.
But nothing to back it up. That's why I say I have facts in hand. And I was fighting against it because what I heard from him didn't make any sense. He watched an explosion in the air on a radar set and dashed back to Roswell and got Colonel Blanchard, the base commander, and Jesse Marcel, and they went out cross country and pick up the wreckage of this crash saucer on a big truck and stuff, and it made no sense. And the people on the land said there was no way you could move a big truck across that land. Horseback, yes, but not much other than that. So, Frank was, he got a lot of his 2 minutes of fame, whatever you want to call it.
You got it.
I met with him. I was there. And he admitted that he hadn't gone out with Blanchard or with so.
Because he had said he came up on an area and saw the craft crashed into the side, and it was a great story. Jeez.
It was a great story.
Richard in North Carolina. Richard, you're on with Stanton Friedman. Go ahead.
Good morning. I wanted to share a story as quickly as I could.
All right.
And ask Mr. Friedman if he had heard anything about anything live. I haven't heard much of that sort of thing, but I actually had an experience where I heard something coming close to where I was living, and the closer it got, louder it got, and the noise was actually holding me in place where I couldn't move, and in the shadow in the window, that behind me, I was laying the head of the bed, was at the window, seeing the shadow on the wall in front of me reaching out like it was reaching toward me. Before that, and of course it just, there a little bit, I felt something going on inside my head. It left, the noise went away. The thing was, is before that happened, I was having severe, young guy, 14, 15, severe migraines. And it was wreaking havoc on my young life, of course. And well, after this visit, they went away.
Well, there are a lot of stories of, I'll call them healings, curing problems, almost inadvertently. In other words, this wasn't a whole city of people who suddenly all felt good, but individuals. And let's face it, like I say, we didn't discover the neutron until 1932. We're not that advanced. And I look at what people call paranormal, you know, telepathy, stuff like that. And I think that there's a lot going on that the aliens know a lot more about than we do. And we're too hard-headed to dig into the strange stuff because it's not easy to deal with. So it wouldn't surprise me if they have a much greater understanding of how humans work, how to affect us with radio waves and with all kinds of other things, you know, lasers. And we're finding that there's more going on than we have acknowledged in the past. We like to think everything is cut and dried, straightforward, no strange stuff, but there is strange stuff. And many great discoveries have happened because somebody had guts enough to dig into something that didn't make any sense. You know, the discovery of penicillin was accidental. Gee, how come this petri dish doesn't have any bacteria all over it? You know, oh, I must have made a mistake. Well, somebody dug, I want to say Fleming, but it's close to that. Whoever discovered penicillin, he pursued it. You go after it and you want to find out. Lift up this little corner. And, you know, we'd like to look at things as if it's all or nothing kind of thing. And as a nuclear guy, you learn pretty early that uranium, for example, is mainly two isotopes, uranium-235 and 238. 235 is the good one. You can get that to fission. But it's only 0.7%. And so you can say, well, it's not worth bothering with, or you can spend a lot of money, as we did during the war, to separate isotopes of uranium. We built a plant a mile long to do that, and we're using 5% of the electrical power in the United States in secret. You follow that little breadcrumb, and you wind up with a full loaf. You know?
Richard, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Wayne in Tacoma, Washington, you're on with Stan Friedman. Go ahead, Wayne.
Good evening, Sir George and Sir Stanton. Wanting to find out, I've got three questions. Wanting to find out, you brought up the containment, nuclear fusion containment power in outer space, and if you know about the David Adair story and him doing that as a youth. Secondly, wanting to find out if you've got any information on element 215 or unobtainium.
Element what?
Unobtainium, element 215, and its development. And thirdly, I was born the year of the Maury Island event, and if there's anything you can tell me about Maury Island, the saucer there that dropped liquid metal in that actually killed a dog on a boat, and
Yeah, the story has been around for a long time, and frankly, I put some of the stranger aspects of it in my gray basket. I just
the old gray basket.
Well, look,
sometimes you have to say, I don't know enough to decide on this. You know, that's the way life is. You don't always know enough. And so David Adair, I've heard, and he's the one who actually built the fusion device, which he tested and so forth, and I didn't believe his story. It made no sense to me as somebody who's worked on fission fusion. Let's see.
The other one, Bob Lazar is the one who talked about element 115.
115, yeah, but yeah. This gentleman said 215, didn't he?
Yeah, maybe he did, but maybe it's 115.
Well, look, there are a number of greater than atomic number of uranium elements. Uranium is number 92. And we've gone up to about 120. And a big accelerator was run for a couple of weeks, and we found four atoms of 115. And Bob, at the beginning at least, was saying that was what powers the UFOs. And that he also said that Los Alamos had 500 pounds of this stuff. Well,
that's right.
The half-life is less than 2 minutes. There is no way to accumulate 500 pounds of it. It's gone. And so I've written about Bob Lazar. He's a bright guy, but his story certainly doesn't ring true. For example, I get very suspicious of people who lie about their credentials. He didn't go to MIT. He didn't go to Caltech. He claimed he had master's degrees from both. And I talked to his high school and found out that he finished in the bottom third of his high school class. And you don't get into MIT or Caltech in the bottom third of your class. Top 15% maybe, you know, it might stretch it to 20 if your standard scores were good. But it just didn't, if a guy can't tell the truth about himself, why should I believe anything else he says? So, you know, it's a great story, but I'm sorry. He is selling scientific equipment and stuff, or at least I think he still is. I haven't checked in the last few months, but United Nuclear is the name of the company. And I heard his presentation with George Knapp in Arizona.
Yep.
And I'm still, give me some facts. And element 115 doesn't cut it.
All right. Sorry. Glenn Dennis, the mortician, he's dead now. What do you think of his story?
I was the first one that he really talked to at any length. It just happened, the circumstances. And I was quite favorably impressed with Glenn.
Said they asked for little caskets at Roswell.
Yeah, they asked for the availability of little caskets. He was an undertaker, and I've been at the Ballard Funeral Home with him. He really was an undertaker.
Yeah, that's a great story. Why would he make that up, you know?
Well, he wouldn't, and I buy his story.
Oh, still there, Stan? Wow, we lost Stan, but we'll get him back. We're right at the break anyway. Stanton Friedman with us as we take your phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Always when there's something controversial, blip, they got it. They wonder what kind of a system they have where they can clip a phone call anytime they want. I'll be back, hopefully, with Stanton Friedman and the rest of your calls. Folks, up there in the Northwest Corridor, circle July 29th. I know it's a few months away, but we're having a live stage show and a meet and greet and music and guests and all kinds of great things at the historic Everett Theater in Everett, Washington. So come on down from the two Vancouvers, from Portland, Seattle. Just come on over wherever you may be and let's have a great time. How do you get tickets? Well, several ways. One, go to coasttocoastam.com in our highlight reel with those four little buttons that you see there right on the front page. Just click them until you find the entertainment section on the event in Everett, Washington. You can call this toll-free number, 425-258-6766. That's 425-258-6766. Or go to their website, historiceverettheater.org. Well, we are back through the magic of radio with Stanton Friedman as we take final phone calls here. Stanton, welcome back, sir.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Somebody's out to get me.
That's exactly what I said when you were clipped off. It seems like just when we're getting into controversial, hot material, somebody's got some system back there, and they go, click, just to do that. Stan, that's happened to us a lot, to other people, too. Oh, my God, yeah. Every time they're getting into some kind of issue, it just clicks off. You know Steve Bassett, right?
Yes.
All right, and I like Steve. He's a great guy. But he and I talk about disclosure. He keeps thinking that we're going to get government disclosure. I don't think it's coming. Where do you stand on that?
I've listened to Steve and Steve Greer. Greer.
Stephen Greer and Stephen Bassett.
Yeah. And I have no reason to think that it's coming either. There are real national security aspects. I mean, I had a security clearance for 14 years, and I take it very seriously. And how can the United States put out what it knows if the Russians and Chinese and whoever else don't put out what they know? You know, we're talking technology for delivering A-bombs, among other things. But I have no reason to think disclosure is coming. You know, maybe they'll celebrate the 70th anniversary of Roswell. I don't know. I'll be there in July, but as an occasion. Incidentally, you picked the date. My birthday, you're having that big thing up in Everett.
Oh, yeah. Well, happy birthday. How old are you going to be then?
I'll be 83.
Good for you,
Stan. Don't tell anybody.
I won't. We won't tell anybody. Good for you. Let's take some final calls here. Okay. Let's go to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. You get a kick out of Bill. Go ahead, Bill. Welcome to the show. You are on Coast to Coast.
Yes. Hi, George. Yes. Hi. Hi, Stan. I'm an amateur astronomer, and I do think there's a phenomenon going on, and I have a fantastic, fantastic, outside-the-box, wild theory of the origin of the aliens and UFO is something you may not have ever thought of. And George, this relates to it. Let me say this. My theory involves what you talked about with Linda Moulton Howe in late February about the simulated universe, the theory that our universe could be a computer simulation. And as you might know, Elon Musk himself says that there's a 10 billion to 1 chance in favor of our universe being a computer simulation. So let me explain. Could these aliens not only be coming from outside our universe, in that they are the beings that created our universe through a computer simulation, and they're coming to most or all of the planets that have life because they created our universe? This is scientific, not religious. What I'm trying to say is consciousness in our universe is the only real thing, if the computer simulation theory is correct. So our consciousness, our mind, or our consciousness could exist in this simulation as well as when we die, or an NDE, near-death experience, or in what I call the real reality. George, what you would call the other side, I would call the real reality, versus our universe here is a simulated reality. So in other words, related to UFOs and aliens, could they have not only created our universe, but they're popping in and out of our universe to visit us, the simulation they created, and maybe to tinker with us and other planets too in certain ways, shape, or form. And then when they pop out, they're popping out into the real reality.
Well, that is an interesting theory. I can find no basis to say yay, verily, to tell you the truth, because we do have concrete, besides consciousness, and I'm not disputing the notion that there is consciousness is very important and so forth. Some very interesting recent work about DNA, that junk DNA, well, that isn't junk DNA. But I've seen no reason to get away from the notion of, you know, real vehicles using advanced technology to get here from someplace else, and lots of them. There's enough planets out there to handle an awful lot of people, beings maybe I should say, instead of people. So I won't say there isn't a consciousness world, but I'm still stuck with vehicles, because they land, people are taken on board, you know, you knock on a wall, you kick the tires, so to speak.
Is that you, Stan?
Well, it's my phone that didn't work before. Let me answer it. This is crazy.
Uh-huh.
Hello?
Live radio, Stan. Live radio.
Goodbye. I don't know who that was, but...
That's a first. All right.
Crazy world we live in. First the phone doesn't work, and then
and now they call you when you're talking on the radio, a national show. All right. So go ahead. So we're talking about Bill's question about ET life out there. And
well, I have no doubt that there's ET life out there and that some of it's coming here. And I just had a first cut at a paper about over 1,000, the responses from over 1,000 experiencers, people who'd had contact with non-human intelligence. I won't say alien. How about NHI, non-human intelligence? That makes some people happier. So I'm satisfied that there's a lot more in the world than we accept as normal and everyday, but I see no reason to say that aliens aren't real beings flying in kick the tires craft. There's just too much evidence for that. Ted Phillips with his physical trace cases, thousands of them from more than 80 countries, where people see something on or near the ground, and after it leaves, one finds physical changes. And in about at least 6% of that, there are beings associated with the craft on the ground, even small footprints. So there's plenty going on. And I'm not saying that we're not going to learn some truly extraordinary stuff that doesn't fit with within our current notions. That's the way progress takes place. But I'm satisfied, you know, real vehicles, real beings, that's good enough for me.
Stan, let's take a few more calls here before we wrap things up for you. And let's go to Tyler in Aurora, California. Hi, Tyler. Thank you.
Actually, that's Colorado.
Oh, you're in Colorado. Okay, it's good. They've got California up here.
Guys, it's a huge honor being on the show. I ended up finding out about your show. I had a little hard time I was going through, actually in the Jefferson County Jail in Jefferson County, Colorado.
Uh-huh.
And it just means extreme amount. It's a huge honor to be on the show. I really appreciate
Thank you, Tyler.
I was actually going to ask about disclosure. I was waiting 15 minutes to ask about disclosure, and you already talked about it. So I guess my question off the top of my head would be, Stan, when do you believe we made our first contact? Are you an ancient alien theorist, or do you think it's been more recent than that? Thank you, guys. Bye.
Well,
I
think it goes back. Call it ancient aliens if you want. There is a fine book by, he's a minister and with a degree in physics, Barry Downey.
Barry Downey, great. But he believes they're demonic, doesn't he?
Well, I didn't get that opinion, but he goes through the Old and the New Testament and finds UFO stories all over the place.
Oh, yes, he sure does.
And so I think they've been checking out the neighborhood for a long time. And, you know, it would be interesting, wouldn't it, to look at the library of the aliens and, you know, how many make it through the time when they develop nuclear technology? Everybody's going to want to find out how their star works. I mean, it makes sense. You
but they're,
ask that question.
They're finding wormholes to travel in, Stan, I think.
Well, okay.
They're bending space and time.
But at least we know that they'll want to know how the star works, and that leads them to fusion, and that leads to flight technology of one kind. I'm not saying there isn't anything better. Of course, there might be. What we don't know is what comes back and hits us on the head. But so I think they've been around a long time. The universe is very old. There was a time when some people were saying the world was created in 4004 B.C. on a Thursday afternoon, I believe it was. And now they left out six zeros at least, and we know our own galaxy is at least 13 billion years old. That's plenty of time for all kinds of strange stuff to happen.
Yeah, it sure is. Matt's in North Carolina. Take it away, Matt.
Hello, George. Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I've been a listener since 2004 and would have been a listener since 94 if I had known it was out here.
Super. Well, thank you for staying with us so long.
And I appreciate talking to Mr. Stanton here for a minute. I'll keep it brief as I can. I've called in before. I'm the one that called in about the golden sunlit glowing rock that crossed over. It was Howard County, Maryland. I grew up outside of Washington, D.C. That's the first time I saw my first UFO. Bizarre. sounded like the Concorde and a fault line cracking at the same time, with three rocket-like ports on the back of a rock.
Jeez.
Very strange. But what I wanted to get into was I wanted to ask you what you think about where I am now. I'm in North Carolina now. I am, 50 miles north and slightly east of Raleigh. And I seem to see activity when I'm not even really looking for it. I just look out the window, and there's something going, phew, what is that? And constantly you see the spraying, whatever they're doing, tic-tac-toe, the donuts on a rope. That was just a couple days ago, donuts on a rope and tic-tac-toe. What do you think about this spraying and UFOs, and what do you think the correlation is?
I don't know what the correlation is, but I'm not surprised at many sightings of things we don't understand. MUFON gets typically between 500 and 1,000 reports a month. And I know from checking my audiences that while 10% of the people have seen a UFO, if you push them a little bit, 90% of those people didn't report what they saw because of the fear of ridicule.
That's right. Same with some pilots. Same thing.
Well, lots of pilots. Yeah. NARCAP. National Aviation Reporting Center for Anomalous Phenomena. That's a fancy thing. Dr. Richard Haynes, who worked for NASA for many years, is the chief scientist for NARCAP.
Stan, and we used to get close encounter reports and reports of, you know, burned out areas, tripod marks, people would see occupants.
We're still getting them, George.
Not as much. Not like the old days. How come?
Well, we're getting accustomed to. We've grown accustomed to your physical trace. Pardon my voice.
I mean, are you saying that people aren't reporting them, even though they're out there,
yeah,
or what? Really?
Yeah, they've grown accustomed to them. Okay, big deal. Saw flying saucer the other day, but lots of other people have seen them, and you know, that's the way it goes.
But I mean, it goes
around the world.
We would have the Roswell crash, the Lonnie Zamora police officer case. We would have these great close encounters, and I'm not hearing them anymore. You know,
I think you're right about that. I think people don't want the light of day shining on them for reporting these things. You know, because the word gets out pretty darn quick, George, especially with your show going.
Well, it does. Marty in Santa Maria, California, first time caller. Hey, Marty, go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call, sir.
You're welcome.
Stan, thanks, sir, for being on the show. Well, my question is, kind of the opposite of the caller before the last. My call's, you know, not very scientific at all, but, well, it depends, I guess. But anyway, both of you, I'm sure, have heard of Aleister Crowley, right?
Yes.
Stan, have you heard of him, sir?
I've heard of him. I don't know much about him.
The occultist.
Yeah, the occultist, absolutely. Okay, so anyway, Mr. Crowley apparently was in a trance-like state, and apparently was in communication with some kind of, you know, being or something. Anyway, he drew this thing. He drew it, you know, and he called it, I want to say the name was AWISS, or spelled A-I-W-S-S. You know what I'm talking about, George? Have you heard anything about that?
Yes. We have heard that.
Okay, so anyway, if you were to look at a picture, if you were to Google, say, Aleister Crowley AWIS, if you were to Google it, and this picture was drawn, I want to say, in the 20s, maybe the 30s. But anyway, if you were to Google a picture, the picture itself, it looks like a gray alien.
And, right.
I mean, what I'm talking about, George?
Yep, you're absolutely right.
It looked just like a gray alien. And this is before Roswell. This is before the idea of grays and what aliens look like or whatever. Anyway.
Well, let's stand. There's no question we've been visited way before Roswell, right?
Yes, very definitely so. No question about it. And like I said, we talked about Barry Downing's book about flying saucers in the Bible. Old and New Testament, and they would qualify as good UFO reports, if you will. So it isn't new. Maybe things have changed on the planet. As I say, back then you weren't worried about Earthlings bothering anybody in the local neighborhood. We didn't have the capability. Camels won't do it. today with our H-bombs and fusion and all that sort of thing. We are a threat to the neighborhood, so you can understand they're being ready to check us out. You've had, I think, Bob Hastings on.
Yes, sure.
About nukes and UFOs. And I was with Robert Salas the other day, last week. He's the one who was in, you know, down below with the, when the 10 missiles went offline at Malmstrom.
What
that's kind of scary, but it's sending a message, isn't it?
Yeah, we got to send them over North Korea.
Yeah, that's scary. It's really scary.
We need to get going on that and get going on that pretty soon. So what is your take on what might be going on worldwide, Stan? Not just in the United States, but worldwide. We've got about a minute left.
Like I said, I've lectured in 19 countries besides the 50 states and 10 provinces. And so we're under surveillance, and I don't know whether these are graduate students doing their thesis work on the development of a primitive society. You can come up with all kinds of reasons. One of the chapters in one of my books is the UFO why questions. I think they're checking us out. I think there are rules in the local galactic community about keep your eye on anybody who's ready to clobber lots of people. We don't want them out here. And we don't have a good track record. You know, I don't know whether the World War II was the worst war in mankind's history or humankind's history or in the local neighborhood. But we don't have a good track record. And so I would expect them to be concerned about restraining us and shutting off our missiles tells us, hey, they've got the power, we don't. So who knows what's going on or where we're going. I don't think they're here to destroy us. You know, they've had plenty of time and plenty of opportunity. And
they could have wiped us out if they wanted to.
I think so. I really do.
I agree wholeheartedly. Stan, thank you. Stay healthy, my friend. We love you, okay? Stanton Friedman, of course, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'll be back in a moment with Paula Harris as we talk about her work as our UFO extravaganza continues.